NPR's longest-serving international correspondent is hanging up her headphones. For the past 41 years, Silvia Poggioli has delighted listeners with her tales of life in Rome. Here she is in 2013, live from St. Peter's Square at the Vatican.
The sea of umbrellas exploded with joy when a red-robed cardinal announced the new pope, who takes the name Pope Francis. Then he too appeared on the loggia overlooking the square and greeted the crowd.
Fratelli e sorelle, buonasera.
Dear brothers and sisters, Pope Francis said, my brother cardinals needed a new pope, and they went nearly to the ends of the world to find him. The crowd went wild.
It wasn't just Rome. Silvia's reporting took her around the world, and perhaps her very last assignment is here with us. Silvia Poggioli, congratulations and welcome.
Thank you for having me.
And after 41 years, this is your last day at NPR. How are you feeling?
It's weird. I just filed a new spot on the latest bulletin on the Pope's health, which seems positive. He's doing well. But yeah, I don't know. It might be the last time I may have filed my last spot. I'm not sure yet. There's a few more hours in the day, so we'll see.
So you've been chasing the news for so long, even on your last day. How did you know it was time to hang it up?
Oh, I don't know. I guess age may be part of it. I'm curious to do other things. I want a different pace, I think. That's mainly it. Precisely this thing of constantly being on alert for one thing or another. The time is up for me on that. I want to move on.
You've done it. You've proved you can do it many times over. Yeah. I think people will be interested to hear some of your personal biography because you were raised in Cambridge, Massachusetts, but you're also the daughter of anti-fascist Italian immigrants who were forced to flee, I understand, Italy under Mussolini. I wonder, did that shape who you'd become as a journalist?
I actually never thought of being a journalist, but it's very interesting. I do remember something. I remember, you know, so many intellectuals and anti-Nazi people in Germany or anti-Francoists from Spain ended up going to the United States. And many of them became my father's colleagues and friends in Cambridge. And so I remember dinner parties that were just fascinating. Everybody had foreign accents, you know, these wonderful. And it all reminded me sort of, you know, the great movies of the 40s and Marlene Dietrich, women smoking with long cigarette holders. It was very cosmopolitan and they talked politics and everything. And so when I went to Eastern Europe, I sort of remembered all that. And it was as if, you know, that Middle Europa, that pre-war Europe was certainly no longer so much in the countries that had been under communism for so long. It had all sort of transferred itself to Cambridge, at least a part of it. So I had this experience of, you know, pre-war Europe in my parents' living room, and I was able to recognize, you know, the seeds of that in Eastern Europe.
What do you think your father would say about the state of the world today?
Well, I'm really glad he doesn't see it because it would be this sort of sense of, you know, it doesn't change. Sort of this return of right-wing nationalism, xenophobia. I think it would be very depressing for him.
You've covered so many crucial moments in Europe in your 41 years at NPR. Let's go back to 1998 for just a moment. You were in Kosovo reporting on the violence between the country's ethnic Albanians and Serbs. Let's listen to this report.
Kidnappings of Serbs by armed Albanians have surged in recent weeks. U.S. officials estimate at least 50 to 60 Serbs are now being held hostage. Observers say the kidnappings are either for personal revenge or, more frequently, a means to frighten people and force them to leave their village.
Silvia, as you know, Yugoslav President Slobodan Milosevic would eventually stand trial for crimes against humanity in that war, died in detention. But when you look back at that conflict, which sometimes seems like it's forgotten at this point, what stands out to you?
Well, what stands out is, like, again, a sort of repetition of history. That's a part of the world where this horrible expression was born, ethnic cleansing. And it was a concept that was horrible, you know, method that was carried out in many Balkan wars over the last century and a half. And it's a horrible thing, you know, looking, I have not covered Ukraine, but I read the reports there, and so much seems so similar. These wars are wars against civilians. They're aimed at killing, at displacing civilians, at grabbing territory. And it just hasn't changed at all over the centuries. That's what's the most depressing thing about it.
Let's take a moment and talk about the Vatican. You've covered three popes, from John Paul II to Pope Francis. Did you have a favorite, Sylvia?
I'm not supposed to say that.
Right. Well, you can now. You're retiring.
No. Well, I mean, John Paul II was a phenomenal pope to cover because he took the Vatican outside of the Vatican. He made it a traveling papacy. He went all over the world, you know, within the Catholic Church. He was very conservative, you know, imposed a moral doctrine. And his successor, Benedict XVI, was very much in that same line. Now, Pope Francis is changing. His slant is much more liberal, less emphasis certainly on doctrine. He's the first pope from the global south. He's very much in tune with the developing world. So, you know, they're very different. And I've traveled a lot with Francis, so I've gotten closer to seeing the traveling papacy with this pope than I did with the previous two.
Well, aside from covering them as newsmakers, what was it like to be in the presence of those men? And maybe I'm specifically wondering about Pope Francis, since you've spent more time with him.
What impressed me tremendously about Francis, I had a very brief, because when we go on the planes, he, at the start, before the plane takes off, he comes around in the back and he is introduced to all the reporters on the plane. Usually there's something like 80, 90 reporters, photographers, camera people, and so forth. So when the first time I had a very brief exchange with him, I said to him, you know, we have a lot, you and I have a lot in common. We're both the children of anti-fascists. His grandparents, his father, also they left Italy during fascism. And he came back to me and he said, you know, my parents almost didn't make it. They had bought a ticket on a ship to go to Brazil, but for one reason or another, they couldn't go. And that ship had a shipwreck a few months later off the coast of Brazil, and a lot of people died. So this was our little exchange, and I treasure it very much.
One of your favorite stories was a profile of an American author named Donna Leon, known for her Commissario Brunetti detective stories. Here you are speaking with her in Venice.
Leon agrees with Henry James' observation more than a century ago that in Venice, there is nothing so disagreeable as the visitors.
There's the Bermuda Triangle of San Marco, Accademia, Rialto. Most tourists spend the major part of their time in that triangle. That's where it's very, very unpleasant to be at almost any daylight hour, at almost any time of the year.
As someone who once lived in Italy for some time, I can appreciate this. I was a part of the problem too, I guess. So why was this one of your favorites?
My mother was Venetian, so I know something about the Venetian character. And she really got the feel of the city and of the people. For instance, she told me, you know, Italy is a country without footnotes. She said a story always begins and passes from the subjunctive to the declarative. She said Italians don't care much about making a fine distinction between speculation and what is fact. And I find that that is very, very perceptive about this country.
41 years, Sylvia, you are ending your career. There's a lot of people, of course, now who are just starting theirs. What is your advice for young journalists who are in a business that's very different than it was when you got your first assignment?
Read history books. And sometimes the older they are, the better. I found that, again, with the collapse of communism, which nobody had predicted, no analyst had possibly imagined that it would collapse so quickly. You know, the most recent books about the Cold War were totally useless. And it turned out, as I was saying before, that you know, in a way, old animosities and disputes reemerged. And so sometimes reading history is, I think, the most useful tool that anybody, and of course, studying languages.
What's next? You mentioned you wanted new pace. You're going to get that. What's next on your plate?
Well, I'm toying with the idea of maybe actually writing something about my father. And so I've got to do a lot of research. I've got all his papers here. So that's pretty much my next project.
NPR's Sylvia Poggioli on her final day at NPR. We feel so fortunate to have spent some time with you today. Thank you so much for everything you've done. We appreciate it.